Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday night edition of Voice of the People Radio. What can you really say? I don't know. I took a look at a Washington Post post thing. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But you are listening live to the Voice of the People Radio on United Public Radio Network on 107.7 FM in beautiful downtown New Orleans, Louisiana. And from parts beyond, if you'd like to call into the show, of course, when we are live Tuesday nights from 10 to 11 Eastern, that's 9 to 10 Central, station call-in number is 504-273-7379. Again, that's 504-273-7379. Getting into this a little bit, I guess if you're really interested in it, it is something that we're working on probably for a Saturday program. The Washington Post, of course, it has larger resources than United Public Radio Network, and they've begun promoting what they call a fact checker, and there are 100 days of Trump claims. So I was looking at that, and they have this nifty infographic that they've had set up, and my wife decides to come in the room and looks at the screen and makes a comment and says, just where did you get that overly large cartoon-like picture of Donald Trump where he's not either smirking, or sneering, or screaming at somebody? That has to be an artistic rendition. And the way I'm looking at the whole thing with the Washington Post at this point is it's almost its own artistic rendition as well. What they're going through at the Post, at their fact checker, they use their cute little Pinocchio cartoons. Instead of giving thumbs up or thumbs down or ratings of 4 or 5 stars, they have been grading President-elect and now President Trump with Pinocchios instead of stars. So if the president makes a claim that is a little egregious or possibly misleading or what the Washington Post likes to term outright false, they then give a Pinocchio for that. If it's bigger, of course, it would get 2 Pinocchios. And if it's really outrageous, I'm sure it would end up garnering the entire 5 Pinocchios. So their strategy with their infographic is that throughout President Trump's first 100 days, Washington Post's fact-checker team will be tracking false and misleading claims made by the president since January 20th when he was inaugurated. And then they also go on and they make the claim that in the 33 days so far, including today, the Washington Post says, we've counted 132 false or misleading claims. So it gets kind of interesting. They then break this down and they give you different claims about different topics. Of course, I think the hottest topic has been immigration. Then there's Trump's biographical record, jobs, foreign policy, the economy, election, health care, crime, and then they have a miscellaneous category. So they have split these up. They've broken these down. And if you are one of those people sitting in front of your computer listening to us right now and would like to check it out, you can go to WashingtonPost.com /graphics/politics/Trump hyphen claims, and you'll be able to pick that up. Or you can just search the Washington Post 100 days of Trump claims. You'll be able to pick up on this little infographic as well. You know, Donald Trump earned 4 Pinocchio ratings as a presidential candidate from the Washington Post. So now that he's president, he has continued his proclivity for making dubious, misleading, or false statements, according to the Washington Post. He also often repeats the same debunked claims, even though they have been fact-checked. It's hard to keep up with all of Trump's rhetoric, so the fact-checker team is assembling in one place all of his suspect statements from his first 100 days as president, and that's why we took an interest in this. Again, we're doing our own sort of first 100 days thing here. And you can go there to the website. You can sort them by the various categories and see how many times President Donald Trump has repeated the same false statement. The most frequent topic of these claims is immigration, which came up 24 times. Other frequent topics are biographical records, 17 claims, and jobs. He has also made 17 claims. Within the topic of immigration, the travel ban was a frequent subject of Trump's claims during the administration's first 2 weeks. Now, there have been no days out of the 33 days tracked by the Washington Post since Trump's inauguration. There have been no days without any recorded false or misleading claims. Are you surprised? In the first 2 weeks of his term, President Trump made 10 supposedly false or misleading claims, according to the Washington Post, about his executive order halting immigration from 7 majority Muslim countries. And the Washington Post wants to let us know that the list of Trump's claims will be updated every Friday through April with new claims made in the previous week. So they also offer that if you see any claims that they're missing, they have a form you can fill out, and you can send them a tip. They also have a fact-checker newsletter, so you can keep up to date on this when they do update the information. They'll email you and let you know that the fact-checker has been updated. I mean, it's just amazing. Getting into that, you know, a lot of President Trump's comments that they're saying contain false or misleading information come from Twitter. And being honest, one of the most incredulous ones in the last few days that has sort of taken American media by storm has been when President Donald Trump took to Twitter and made a comment on immigration and said, "My statement as to what's happening in Sweden was in reference to a story that was broadcast on Fox News concerning immigrants in Sweden." Now, Trump referred to rising crime rates in Sweden, but the country's overall rate has fallen in recent years. Now, this is quoting the Washington Post. "Sweden has welcomed refugees and immigrants, but Swedish crime experts do not agree that the country's immigration policies are linked to crime." I don't know that the policies are necessarily linked to crime, but I don't know, honestly, that the crime being committed by the immigrant population in Sweden has been reported adequately in the media. We go to 4 hours ago with the BBC, and Sweden is now probing riots. If you haven't been paying attention in the news the last couple of days, there have been riots in Sweden because of this. Now, to blame the President of the United States for making a comment about something that was said by an anchor on Fox News for a situation that then blows up in Sweden, it just makes me think that the people in Sweden have so little to do that they're going to blow up and be rioting because of what President Trump said on Twitter. I don't really think that's a legitimate way to look at this situation. You know, the Swedish police have launched an investigation after a riot erupted in a predominantly immigrant suburb of the capital, Stockholm, and that's where it gets into the whole immigrant issue, which is what I think they were talking about on Fox News, and then President Trump going to Twitter trying to paraphrase something that he saw in a television news article in 140 characters or less, ended up making a remark about what was going on in Sweden last night. The Swedish media takes this to heart and says, "What was going on in Sweden? There really wasn't anything going on in Sweden." And then here we go. Now, well, we have rioting in Sweden. So, I mean, is this a situation where the President of the United States has such power that he is able to influence thousands of people in Sweden, and then they end up running amok and having a riot? I mean, to me, that's going a little far, you know. But seriously, one officer fired at rioters in Sweden overnight had threw rocks at police. The unrest in the Rinkeby suburb on Monday night came after the police tried to arrest a suspect on drugs charges. It also comes after U.S. President Donald Trump referred to Sweden in a speech on immigration problems, baffling the Swedes about a non-existent incident. You know, so here we now have an incident. Rioters, some of them wearing masks, threw rocks, set vehicles on fire, and looted shops from about 1900 hours. I don't know. What would you say? 8 o'clock in the evening on Monday in Rinkeby, which has a history of unrest. Of course, they also have this substantial immigrant population. The number of people coming in as refugees in Sweden and them settling in there has something to do with it. Warning shots were fired, but police later said one officer had also fired at least one shot at stone throwers, which is a very rare occurrence in Sweden. So you can look at it, I guess, how you want to interpret it. Some people will probably say that the president taking to Twitter and making these remarks on social media end up creating an incident, which is bizarre. No gunshot wounds were reported. A number of other injuries were reported, including injuries to a shopkeeper. A photographer from Dagens Nyheter said he was assaulted by a group of people when arriving to report on the unrest and spent the night in a hospital. The unrest subsided at about midnight, so you had a good 4 hours of running amok. Police spokesman Lars Bistrom said, "This kind of situation doesn't happen that often, but it's always regrettable when it happens. Sweden has seen urban unrest in some areas with large immigrant populations where there have been job and integration issues. In a rally in Florida on Saturday, Mr. Trump suggested Sweden could face the kind of terrorist attacks that have hit France, Belgium, and Germany. He said, and I quote, "You look at what's happening in Germany, you look at what's happening last night in Sweden. Sweden, who would believe this? Sweden. They took in large numbers. They're having problems like they never thought possible." The statement about a particular incident on Friday night baffled Swedes, including former Prime Minister Carl Bildt, who tweeted, "Sweden, terror attack, what has he been smoking?" The hashtag last night in Sweden was soon trending on Twitter, and the Swedish embassy in Washington, D.C., asked the State Department for clarification. Mr. Trump later tweeted that his statement was in reference to a story that was broadcast on Fox News concerning immigrants in Sweden. Some people suggest that President Trump might have been referring to a clip aired on Fox News on Friday night of a documentary about alleged violence committed by refugees in Sweden. President Trump continued with a tweet on Monday saying the fake news media is trying to say that large-scale immigration in Sweden is working out just beautifully. Not. Now, what is Sweden's refugee policy? Sweden, with a population of about 9.5 million people, saw a sharp increase in asylum seekers in 2015, with more than 160,000 people arriving. With the influx, tensions also rose with some isolated attacks on immigrants, as well as pro- and anti-immigrant demonstrations. The killing of a 22-year-old woman in January 2016 by an asylum seeker based at the center where she worked put further pressure on the government to reassess its approach. There was a drop in numbers last year after the country introduced new border checks, incurring longer processing times, as well as financial incentives for migrants who voluntarily returned to their country of origin. So those are the things that Sweden took to heart and put into place. They added new border checks because they pretty much had a non-existent border patrol and policy before this influx of immigrants in 2015. So they had to add new border checks in 2016. There were longer processing times. They were actually going through and vetting these people, not just on the idea that they were in dire emergency situation and they were a refugee and seeking political asylum from let's say, Syria, where there's been the 6 years of civil war now. And so they decided that they were going to offer pay for migrants who voluntarily returned to their country of origin. Now, if you had to take a guess here, what most likely also ends up happening is that if the financial incentive was something that was given to them out front, then you would have a migrant who wouldn't necessarily return to their country of origin with the payout that goes up front from the Swedish government, because they would just end up going to the Netherlands or somewhere nearby. So it's going to be interesting. We'll get back to that and let you know exactly what we find out on how that worked out for Sweden, and if they actually end up paying the migrants that voluntarily return to their country of origin. Because what's interesting to me is the idea that if you're paying them once they've returned to where they came from, one, how are you actually facilitating that? And two, I'm hoping that you guys in Sweden did it that way, because if not, you know, you just gave them travel money and they went somewhere else. I mean, it doesn't take rocket science to figure that part of it out. The migrant crisis dominates Sweden's politics. So it's amazing that you would end up with that type of media reaction after the president made a general statement like that. I mean, and again, how can you paraphrase something that you watched over the course of a half an hour or 45 minutes in 140 characters or less on Twitter? I do say one thing, that the president, when he is tweeting about these issues, he tries to use the 140 characters, and he usually doesn't go to the ends of dropping in any kind of link into the tweet so that somebody can actually go watch a rebroadcast of what he is referencing. You know, maybe that's something that the White House press, the secretary, needs to talk to the president about doing, and hopefully it's something they're doing on the at POTUS, at POTUS account, for the President of the United States on Twitter. A lot of times President Trump is still making these opinions known on Twitter, using his Twitter handle, which is @ Real Donald Trump. And some of those are then retweeted by the official POTUS account. So maybe somebody will look into short-linking President Trump there. How safe is Sweden really? You know, other than these riots, Sweden has generally low crime rates. Preliminary statistics from the Swedish Crime Survey, in Swedish of course, show only a marginal increase in 2016 from 2015. Fraud and crimes against individuals were up, but drug crimes and theft had decreased. The number of reported rapes increased by 13%, although that is still lower than the number reported of 6,700 in 2014. And so that is something that I think even the BBC really isn't going to touch on, but we're being honest with you here on Voice of the People Radio. The number of reported rapes increasing by 13% is directly proportionate to the migrant and the refugee migrant crisis in Sweden, because of the cultural variations where the instance of rape is not considered criminal in these countries, in the countries that the president has attempted to limit incoming immigration from with this executive order. No, we haven't really touched on the new language of the executive order, but just to go through that for one half of a second with you, the new language in the executive order on the immigration is really the same as it was before, except for the fact that people that have legitimate U.S. citizenship and have a green card are exempt from, you know, all of the peccadilloes that they were going through with the customs enforcement agents and the transportation security agency and the Homeland Security Department as they were being vetted and brought in into the American airports when the original executive order went down. Of course, that happening a month ago today, so we all know how that has gone for the last month, but the revised executive order has also been placed into official paperwork as policy by the Homeland Security Agency, and so they do have actual instructions based on the executive order as it stands. Now, Sweden, with terror attacks, because that's the big thing that they jumped all over President Trump for, there have been no terror attacks in Sweden since the country's open-door policy on the migration issue began in 2013. In 2010, two bombs detonated in central Stockholm, killing the attacker, who was an Iraq-born Swedish man, and injuring two others in what police described as a terrorist attack. Okay, so there hasn't been a lot, but we're going back through the last 8 years here. In October of 2015, a masked man who was believed to have far-right sympathies killed a teacher and a pupil in a sword attack. You know, so that's the thing that the Swedish are more known for. You're going to have the Iraqi-born Swedish guy that does the suicide bomber thing, and then you have the guy wearing a mask and killing people with a sword. In Malmo, Sweden, last October, a fire at a Muslim community center was claimed by the Islamic State. Okay, but let me read this again. In Malmo, Sweden, last October in 2016, a fire at a Muslim community center in Sweden was claimed by the Islamic State group. The incident was cited by the White House and the Obama administration in the list of incidents it deemed underreported by the media. Okay, that happened during the Obama administration. President Trump came out and was saying that there were these incidents that were happening all through this presidential campaign, which really started off in early 2016, and he put that on the list of things that he claims was underreported by the media. Had you heard about a fire in a Muslim community center in Malmo, Sweden, that was claimed by ISIS, or the Islamic State, or ISIL, whatever we want to call these guys? I still call them Al-Qaeda. You know, that's because that's where this Islamic State thing branched from. When Al-Zarqawi was killed in a military drone strike, lost our connection. Okay. I don't know. Are we back on live? Okay. We are back on live. You know, it makes you wonder sometimes who's listening to us, you know? You know, getting back to what about the terror attacks? And you're listening live to Voice of the People Radio on United Public Radio Network on 107.7 FM in beautiful downtown New Orleans, Louisiana. And the call-in number, of course, the station is 504-273-7379. And you are listening to Voice of the People Radio here with your host, Greg Miller, after that long, laborious minute of silence. After we had lost our connection, I apologize for that. But, you know, and I know some people are going to disagree with my comments about the idea that the number of reported rapes increased by 13%. I don't think that that's a coincidence, okay? I mean, there may be officials who are not wanting to admit that, but I don't think that you have an increase of 13% per capita of rape being reported in a country like Sweden, and it's not directly related to the number of migrants or political refugees, people seeking asylum, however you want to categorize it. You know, again, going back to 2010, two bombs detonated in central Stockholm, killing the Iraqi-born Swedish man who was the attacker and injuring two others in what police described as a terrorist attack. That was the last terrorist attack that was done on Swedish soil before we had this immigrant and refugee crisis from Sweden beginning in 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, and going on into this year. And of course, it's been much more severe in Greece and Southern Europe. But in 2015, in October, a masked man who was believed to have far right-wing sympathies killed a teacher and a pupil in a sword attack, and he was a masked man. In Malmo last October, a fire at a Muslim community center was claimed by the Islamic State group. It wasn't done by a bunch of Islamic-hating Swedish people that wanted the refugees kicked out from the suburb in Stockholm. This was claimed by ISIS, okay, during the Obama administration, and it's the one that made the list of incidents that the Trump administration said had been underreported by the media, which is one of the reasons why he was engaged with whatever Fox News program he was watching, documentary or otherwise, and decided to try to give his Cliff's Notes version of what he had just saw on Fox News, which probably isn't a very good idea watching any Fox News program trying to give a Cliff's Notes version of it in 140 characters or less on Twitter. You know, but he's the president. He's going to try to communicate his point to the people. He said that for him, Twitter was a wonderful platform to stay connected to the American people. So separately, Sweden is believed to have the highest number of Islamic State fighters per capita every 100 people. Okay, we go back to this again. This is according to the BBC. Sweden is believed to have the highest number of Islamic State fighters. Not Syrian refugees, not people from a country like Iraq that are trying to escape political persecution or anything. The highest number of Islamic State fighters per capita in Europe. About 140 of the 300 who went to Syria and Iraq have since returned, leaving the authorities to grapple with how best to reintegrate them into society. And the question becomes at this point, why is the government of Sweden being tolerant of this, and why are they attempting to reintegrate these people into society when they didn't have border patrol conditions, they didn't have border security issues, you know, and now they have this rioting, you know? So, you know, let's ask the obvious question that comes away from this and look at, for example, how Sweden became an exporter of jihad. Again, you know, 140 get sent away, and out of 300 they come back. Well, what sense does that make? And you wonder about, you know, why the president's trying to make an overreaching executive order. If people are coming out and saying, well, it's an outright Muslim ban, he's looking at this information, okay, from BBC News in Gothenburg. Sweden is a peaceful democratic state that has long been a safe haven for those fleeing conflict. This is before the Trump administration, okay? So this is going to be something from the BBC that doesn't have let's blame Donald Trump's Twitter for what happened, okay? Yet many young people whose family took refuge there are now turning their back on the country of Sweden. More than 300 people have gone to fight from Sweden in Syria and Iraq, making Sweden per capita one of the biggest exporters of jihadists in Europe. And reporter goes on, reported by Yalda Hakim in the BBC News from Gothenburg in Sweden. And this was from the 7th of October, 2016. She goes on to say, I met a young woman in the basement of a building in Gothenburg, Sweden's second city. Okay, so, you know, think Chicago compared to New York with the United States. Okay, the second city. She seems like any other young Western woman, wearing tight clothing and makeup. But she has recently returned from Raqqa in Syria, where her husband died fighting for the so-called Islamic State. She recalls some of the horrors she witnessed there, the sound of Yazidi women being raped in the room next to hers, offenders being lashed, beaten with whips, and executed, the constant bombardment and airstrikes, all part of the daily life of a jihadi bride. To begin with, it had seemed more appealing. She had been glad to be there. But after her husband died, she began to notice things that were alien to the religion she had been brought up in. When they burned the Jordanian pilot, I asked them why they burn up a human being. Is that right in Islam? What I know is that you are not allowed to burn anyone. Okay, so these are observations that are being made by this woman. You know, so you think about that. She watches the Jordanian pilot being burned by the ISIS members. With the help of another ISIS fighter, she managed to get smuggled back out of Syria across the border to Turkey before flying back to Sweden. She shows me pictures of her Kalashnikov, which is a rifle, and her injured daughter, her face covered with shrapnel wounds. Why did she decide to join the Islamic State, I asked. She says, when you go this way, you don't think about the worldly life, like I can have a good bed. You don't care about these things. You just think about the fastest way I can die and go to heaven. After the interview, I drop her off on the outskirts of the city. Driving away, I notice her playing with a stray cat, looking just like any other young, shy girl. Gothenburg is where much of the recruitment for jihad is taking place in Sweden. With a population of just over 500,000, this port city and former industrial powerhouse has seen at least 100 men and women leave to join militants fighting for the proclaimed caliphate. It is one of Sweden's most diverse cities. A third of the population of Gothenburg are from immigrant backgrounds, many of them Muslim. And in the northeastern suburb of Angered, the proportion rises to more than 70%. And if you're interested, it's actually spelled like the English word angered. Okay? So you just, you know, take that as you know, somewhat of an irony. Sweden's massive housing shortage and long waits for rent-controlled apartments in the center of town mean that many new arrivals end up here and stay here. This includes some of the 160,000 people who sought asylum in Sweden last year. Angered has become a tough area to police. Parts of it are classified as vulnerable, which in Swedish police terminology indicates a breakdown of law and order, among other things. Now, go back to that 13% uptick in rape statistics. And the emergence of a parallel society. I am told that religious enforcers attempt to control the community to ensure Sharia law is adhered to. They allegedly harass and intimidate people, mainly women, for the way that they dress and for attending parties where there's music and dancing, which they consider haram. It's no good. Meanwhile, two-thirds of children have dropped out of school by the time they're 15, and unemployment is 11%, high by Swedish standards. You know, think about that, 11%. At the peak of the unemployment crisis at the end of the Bush administration, when Barack Obama became the president of the United States, the unemployment rate was 7.5% in the United States. Okay, so this unemployment rate in this Angered area is 50% higher than it was throughout the United States when we had the post-mortgage crisis. economic crisis here. So think about that. 50% worse. You know, can you remember back 8 years ago? You know how bad it was. 50% worse, and that is as of October of last year, okay? So we're not talking about enough time for them to have had a huge economic recovery. They've got an unemployment situation going on there in this suburb where most of this 160,000 migrant population went, which is 50% worse than what we had going on in the United States. And we really thought that, you know, that things had gone and hit rock bottom. One softly spoken young man, who she will call Imran, the reporter here, told me that hardline recruiters were manipulating young people who had lost their way and were encouraging them to join the Islamic State. Like a big brother will say to you, like a father will say to you, stop doing drugs, stop hitting people, come with us instead, fight for God, fight for Allah, fight for your freedom of the Muslims. The Muslim people are being killed and raped. You're wasting your life. You don't get nothing from the Swedish people. Now, this guy has been a criminal just like me and done a lot of bad stuff, and now he's coming to me and he's telling me, you have to change. And that is the message that the young man is relating to the reporter. Now, Imran was initially eager to travel to the Middle East and join the Islamic State. But after seeing videos and photographs of their brutality, he says he is now afraid and he wants to build a life for himself in Sweden instead. Now, suburbs like Angered have become pressure cookers of discontent. And again, you could spell that Angered if you want. That's exactly how it's spelled in English. You know, suburbs like Angered have become the pressure cookers of discontent. You see this built-up resentment mainly with the second-generation non-ethnic Swedes, as they are known here. That's the terminology that's used, non-ethnic Swedes. Many of their parents fled war-torn countries in search of safety and found it in Sweden. They appear grateful for what the country has offered them. Their children, however, often feel they've been discriminated against and left out of the system. Many young people I spoke to said they felt disconnected from the country where their parents came from, but didn't feel that they were Swedish either. The issues here have been further compounded by the sudden influx of refugees fleeing wars in Syria and Iraq. Accepting refugees is part of what it means to be Swedish. Last year alone, Sweden accepted more refugees per capita than any other European country. You know, and you look at the issues that have been plaguing the Germans in the news, and you wonder about that. Sweden has actually accepted more refugees per capita than any other European country. So that's probably another point that was brought up in the documentary that President Trump was tweeting about. Ulf Boström, a veteran Gothenburg policeman, has become Sweden's only, and that's only, integration officer, puts part of the blame for the problems the city now faces on police cutbacks. We have lost more than 50% of the policemen working in uniform in the different areas. 50%, he says. You can see for yourself, how many policemen have you seen during your time here in the areas you have been to visiting? Have you seen any? No, I reply. Boström himself, however, is a well-known figure in Gothenburg suburbs and spends most of his time building trust and engaging with the migrant community, different faith groups. He took me to the Bellevue Mosque on the outskirts of Gothenburg, which is reported to have had ties to various Islamist and terrorist-designated organizations. Many of the people who have gone to Syria and Iraq have connections there, and their spiritual leader, Al-Shabaab, Hassan Hussein, visited in 2009. Later, I attended Friday prayer at Angered's largest mosque where about 500 worshippers had gathered. The imam, who came to Sweden from Syria 3 years ago, urged them to respect Swedish laws and customs and to assimilate as much as they could into mainstream society. But I was told that on one occasion, two men stood up and verbally attacked him for condemning extremism before they were escorted out. Just another indication of how divided and polarized these migrant and immigrant communities are. What has happened to the Swedes who have traveled to Iraq and Syria? I asked Bostrom. Well, there is a number of 311 or so, but none have come back and have been arrested. So I think our terrorism law is not functioning well enough, he says. Only in April 2016 was the law changed to make it illegal to travel abroad with the intention to commit acts of terrorism. That's the Swedish law, okay? Only in April of 2016 was the law changed to make it illegal for them to travel abroad with the intention to commit acts of terrorism. Klaus Freiberg, the regional police chief and Ulf Postrom's boss, says the authorities are aware of the problems they face and know that security needs to be improved in areas where parallel societies have taken shape. But the reality is that right now, young people from immigrant backgrounds are being radicalized. Why would someone raised in Gothenburg want to leave one of the most peaceful and progressive countries in the developed world to join a violent extremist group in the Middle East? With so many of them saying they don't feel Swedish, perhaps the bigger question is, has integration in Sweden's experiment with multiculturalism failed? Yeah, and again, I mean, that is a point of view that was expressed in the beginning of October of 2016. We want to give due credit to Hjalta Hakim from BBC News in Gothenburg, Sweden for that. That gives you an idea of what's really going on there, that you have 300 people that left out of 160,000. I mean, that's not a lot, but still, considering that they also didn't have a criminal penalty for people leaving the state of Sweden to go to any part in the Middle East, be it Iraq, be it, back to Syria, wherever, to commit an act of terrorism, was not a crime until they changed the law. So keep, try to keep that in mind, because that's really what the administration, I think, is trying to prevent here in the United States. Now, their methodology, it may be a little bit wrong, or, underthought, maybe not thought out enough. Maybe there wasn't enough lead time given to the news media or to, an understaffed group of people in the White House staff that were, of course, going to be dealing with administration holdover, fill-in personnel from the Obama administration, and they've known that. They're actually still dealing with that as well, folks. You still have people who are waiting to be vetted by Congress to be able to take their position as appointees within the Trump administration. So they're not yet playing with a full deck of cards. I mean, you could say that in more than one sense, but quite literally, when it comes to the personnel, they're not playing with the full deck. They don't have the luxury that at this time in 2009, President Obama had, of course, being reelected in 2012, going into 2013, shuffling or adding personnel back in when the Obama administration came in for a second term. You didn't have a transition like you did between the Obama administration, which was leaving after two terms constitutionally, and the incoming Trump administration. There was no Obama to Obama transition. There was some difficulty with some things with the Trump transition team. They're still going through transitional issues. They're shuffling people around. They've changed national security advisors, have been fired. People who have worked underneath some of these people have also been fired in the last couple of weeks, some of them for going into closed-door meetings and making some inappropriate remarks. One of them unabashedly about the hotness of Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka. in a closed door meeting of people. I mean, and of course, sources speaking on condition of anonymity reported to the news media that that was one of the things that was blurted out. And the crazy thing about this is that these advisors serve in very high capacities, and if you were to look it up, you would almost be shocked that you would have somebody who would make an off-the-cuff remark like that, albeit in a closed meeting, but now running, you know, a military service college or a service branch for the intelligence community. They've just been shuffled back to the position that they held before. So that's another thing that has to come in with this administration. And, you know, something that I don't have time to get into tonight after touching on this why these things happen in Sweden issue is that the Trump administration has a back catalog of over 100 judicial positions in the United States that were never filled by the Obama administration due to one political reason or another. And they really have been stymied by some of these appointments and foot-dragging processes. And we should be seeing over the course of the next few months the Department of Justice and those people involved within the administration making their best effort to start showing the public where these appointments are going forward. And perhaps it's going to take some of the you know, focus off of other things which are not as important, because when you don't have a sitting judiciary in your country and you have a backlog that's going to take 6 months to a year to fill out, you also have to look at the reality that you have a backlog of 2 to 3 years worth of cases that have been held up at one level or another because they cannot be shuffled off away from the districts, because we only have so many federal districts for courts in the United States. And the president needs to fill all of these positions in these district courts and in the lower courts, and then have the system working to begin processing a backlog of cases that have not been heard since before Donald Trump announced that he was actually a candidate for president of the United States. So we are hoping that in the next few weeks we'll see some movement on that. Do stay tuned to United Public Radio Network after Voice of the People signs off here. But if you have any questions or comments, or you want to join me on Saturday afternoon, we are on the air with you from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturdays. And again, you can email the show at voiceofthepeopleradio@gmail.com. You can also take down the studio call-in line, because you can call in between 4 and 6 p.m. Eastern, or that is 3 to 5 Central Time, at 504-273-7379. You can catch Voice of the People on 107.7 FM in New Orleans, Louisiana, on United Public Radio Network. With that being said, stay tuned for further programming here on United Public Radio Network tonight. You definitely will not want to miss the late-night programming, which I can't say enough that rivals what you might hear on your average episode of Coast to Coast AM. So you want to check that out. Take a look at the lineup. And Spaced Out Radio with Dave Scott will be coming your way with some things of interest. And it's entertaining radio. You know, that's what I think. Sunday is the only night that you don't catch some of us live here on the station, and you'll be able to pick up some rebroadcasts. Of course, you can also check us out on soundcloud.com/UPRN for podcasts. You can also download us into your iTunes and on Podbean and several other apps. Check out the website for the station at http://www.uprntalkradio.com for station schedule, who the personalities are, what dates and times. You can pick up the live programming at least from Monday through Saturday, all through the week. And it has been wonderful for me to be able to sit here and talk with you again. Without you, the listening audience, there is no Voice of the People Radio. And have a great night, everybody.
show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating